Thank you very much, Paul. My name is Howard Noble. I work for the Computing Services Department here in the university. So I thought I'd just start off by explaining the history of the project. As part of my role, I have to liaise with departments around the university. And through this role, I met academics in the ECI department, which is part of the Centre for the Environment in Oxford. And they basically spotted that, they were presenting around the country basically on radio reports and this kind of thing, and they realized that they really had to start walking the walk in this area. And one of the areas they spotted was saying, well, what are we doing with our desktop computing? So they asked me to take this requirement and see what we could do. So this was 3 years ago now. And at that time, I don't know if you remember, practically every news report was the world's falling apart, we've got to reduce carbon emissions. If we don't do it, a catastrophe is going to come. So I was at the stage where I said, well, I'm sick of hearing all this stuff. Let's try and do something about it as well. So I was very keen. And I took this requirement to the JISC, who funded this project. And after about 6 months, to the JISC credit, they raised a program and started funding these types of initiatives. So we came up with a rough plan. And I started talking to Daniel, who introduced just now, another guy, David Wallum, at the e-research centre, and we came up with a plan. And the plan was that we're not really going to be asked to ask people to turn their computers off unless we can provide a facility for them to turn them on remotely. So the key part of this project in Oxford is to develop what's called a Wake on LAN service. But before I go into this, that topic, I just want to briefly show you some sums that also went into the proposal. So I'll just point over here. So this might be a typical large university like Oxford. So what you're looking at here is a rough way to calculate how much your desktop computers will cost you in the first example here if they're left on all year round. So we're assuming here that a desktop computer and monitor run at about 105 watts. So we're talking 85 watts for the computer and about 20 watts for the monitor. This is the number of hours in a year. This is approximate number of computers that there are perhaps in Oxford. We're not sure about this. It's a very devolved structure, as Paul said, but that seems to be a reasonable estimate based on the type of people that are in Oxford and making some assumptions how many computers there are for that type of person. And this is roughly what we pay for electricity. So one of the other triggers, as Paul said, was we were paying a lot less than this 3 years ago, and this took a large hike, as I'm sure many of you have seen. So you end up with an astonishing figure like this. This is how much desktop computers could be costing you if you've got no power management at all in your university. So the essential thing to see is if you can have a policy that tries to encourage as many people as possible to just turn them off at the end of the working day. So all you're asking people, say, when you go home, turn them off. So they're going to be off at weekends, they're going to be off at night, they're going to be off at holidays, public holidays, annual leave. And then you start getting a figure more like this many hours they're needed. So this is on all during the day, and we're not sure if we need our computers all the way through the day, but they're on for, I think it's 10 hours a day in this calculation. So instantly your cost drops to this amount. So the actual realizable savings will be something in the middle of those two numbers. This is probably the ceiling, because it's very unlikely that all your computers be left on, especially in libraries where computers have been switched off because they're seen as a fire hazard overnight. So your libraries won't be in this typically. But it's going to be somewhere in the middle of this, probably halfway. So we estimate that 50% of computers do have some sort of power management. 50% are left on all the time. So if you are able to institute that kind of policy where computers will be switched off, you end up with a kind of energy graph like this. And this is what we're aiming for. So this is a 24-hour period. This is the night time. And you're looking for that kind of drop here. So this is hopefully what you see. This is the proof in the pudding. If you have been successful with your power management, that's what you should start seeing in your half-hourly meter readings. So my talk's called the Oxford Approach. And really what I'm doing is introducing the rest of the speakers this morning. So Kang's going to talk a lot more about how we've implemented Wake on LAN and monitoring and the monitoring service. All I want to say is, all it is a service that allows you to turn computers on remotely. And the theory is that if you can do that, people can start turning them off more often. So why don't people turn the computer off? The main reasons, the main use cases that this gets you around is, so an academic might say to you, I leave it on because I go to conferences a lot and I quite often need to get access to my computer. So now you can say to them, if that's your problem, if that's why you're leaving them on, then switch them off. If you need them, switch it on just in case. So don't leave it on just in case you need it. Switch it on when you need it. So they go to the, so you'll see later on, in Oxford they can now go to a website, press a button, their computer will switch on. A few minutes later they can get access to their computer. The other main use case for Wake on LAN is where you've got third-party systems like security systems or backup systems, or for instance Condor, which is some software that gives you, you can allow you to run grid experiments on your computer, so it's distributed programming. So these third-party systems can then say, what we want to do is a good use of computers. It's not, they're not idle when they're doing this work. You still want to carry it on, but you don't have to leave large clusters of computers on just in case there's a grid experiment or you need access for to do a backup. So you can then wire these type of services to say, give me 10 computers to do a grid experiment. Or we know we're going to do a backup on Wednesday night. Allow the backup service to wake my computer and hopefully wake switch off as well when it's finished backup. So you go instantly from 12 hours on to just a half an hour to do the backup. The other use case is where people say, I'm not turning my computer off because it takes too long to start up. And that's quite typical. So we also programmed in a facility that allows you to wake your computer automatically in the morning, each morning. So you can start your computer up at 8 o'clock, and that will save you some time in the boot up time. So you can kind of, you almost can get around to that. It doesn't get you past the login script issue, but your computer will take less time to start up. So there you start getting an armory and what you, and the tools that you can, you're providing and what you can say to people. So people, when you first suggest that they should turn the computer off, often come up with a barrage of reasons why they shouldn't. And some people do, and other people say, great, I always wanted to do this and I wasn't allowed to. So Kang will explain how the tool works and how we've implemented it. I just wanted to say from the business perspective, that's what we're trying to do. The other major thing we're trying to do, and this is the really difficult bit, is how do you go from a culture of leaving your computer on to a culture of switching them off? There's not one... So as I said, this was funded by the JISC, and the main reason why we were funded is because if we can do it in Oxford, we can do it anywhere. There's every type of culture, every type of use, every type of computer here. If we can get all the colleges and all the departments to do this, then we'll have, and we document it in a way that explains how they did it, and not just for staff computers. So what we're typically documenting is all the tools and techniques they used to achieve power management in their department. So for instance, how they communicated with staff, what they're doing on their staff computers, their public computers, which is where you drop in and just use a computer if you want to, the training rooms, so teachers often have specific requirements of how they want the computers managed. And you know, the figure I gave before of 16,000 computers doesn't include the maybe 20,000 laptops that are brought onto campus for, 30 weeks a year or 24 weeks a year? So you're completely ignoring that. So I've just made contact with a student group and I said, I'm going to give you the information, I want you to run the campaign. How should we tell students to start doing power management? And then that's another few, maybe 10,000 computers that are drawing power from the university electricity supply. The other area that is very important not to forget is sustainable procurement. Now, Peter James is going to talk more about this afternoon, but all I want to say is it's not really good enough for us to say, well, we're going to deal with in-use carbon emissions and costs, because the contribution that you can make towards the environment if you start purchasing intelligently is as important, if not more, than cutting your electricity costs. Computers take a huge amount of electricity to make, or power to make, sorry. They include lots of chemicals that you don't want to be released into the environment. There's all kinds of reasons why you don't want to do this. And there's also the disposal at the other end. So as I said, Peter's going to talk more about that. But what can we do? There's lots of things we can do. For instance, increase the life cycle of our computers. So it's quite standard practices in IT just basically to throw a computer away after a specific amount of time, even if it's completely fine, it's working. The same applies to monitors. I mean, a monitor, if it works, why throw it away? but it has been standard practice. So increasing the life cycle, perhaps sharing more equipment, it allows you to buy less equipment, and other measures. There's so many things, but as I said, Peter's going to bring this up more. Okay, so it's 2009. There's approximately 1,470,000 desktop computers in UK higher and further education. This initiative is not small if we can take it on. As Paul mentioned, this 2009 is a very good year to reduce costs. We're all under budgetary constraints at the moment. It's been a very good time to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and that's been true for decades. CRC league table, Daniel's going to talk more about this afternoon. This is legislation that starts officially in April, but it's actually already started, because the initiatives we're doing now and the year before will count towards what happens in this league table. So this CRC league table, in theory, may affect our brands. We don't want to be low down in this league table. UK energy security, and rising costs, that's more or less the same thing. I mean, just because they've raised to 12p recently doesn't mean they could double in a few years' time. Who knows what's going to happen? So we don't want to be caught out. Not having all the tools and procedures in place before that hike is going to leave a university very vulnerable to a hike. Staff morale and student impressions. A couple of years ago, I sent out a survey and I asked, how important do you think it is to reduce energy costs and carbon emissions in IT? And pretty much 90% of people said it was very important and they'd be willing to do something towards this initiative. There's lots of people like myself and probably everybody in this room who's in that boat, and they think, well, if we're not doing something, it starts to wear on you and it starts to affect your morale. Why are we not doing anything? So, and students coming into university as well, they don't want to see that they're studying in a university that's not performing well. Desktop computers as well. I mean, it might seem like a small thing, but it's something that we all use, and it's a very tangible way to get across some complex messages about power management. So if you're thinking of more initiatives in the future, it's a good one to start with. It has a large effect. It's doable. It's not easy, but it's not too difficult, and it's definitely something that should happen, but it's tangible, and everybody will notice it, and then you can start putting other energy initiatives on top of that, because you have to start explaining what is a what, how much does the university pay for electricity, all the kinds of things you have to do to communicate this. It's going to apply to what servers you want to buy in the future, how you're going to build your data centers, and any other initiative. And perhaps the most compelling argument is just why wait? I mean, there's not any point in waiting now. It's going to have to happen. And the sooner you do it, the more money is going to be saved in the long run. So there's not a lot of point in waiting. Okay, so in the email I sent out, I did say that JISC has agreed to fund what they call a benefits realization project. And what that means is all the work that we've done over the last 18 months, they want us to think, how can we take that work and make it have as much benefit to everyone else in HENFE? So the only thing I asked today is that you could, if you come up to anyone who you see speaking, who organized this conference, and if you have ideas, just tell us them. We'll write them down. We'll try and build them in the project plan. This project is also to collaborate with Liverpool, who are basically a long way ahead of us. They've been doing this for many years. They've looked at all the issues involved in this. So but we complement each other quite well, because Liverpool's approach previously has been much more about local power management. How do you get power management on your own desktop working, where our approach has been, how do you wake computers up? And then, so the two should fit together very nicely. And the last point I'd like to make is, whenever I do this talk, I feel like I'm talking to I feel like I'm preaching to people who don't need to be preaching to. So it's really, you should be asking yourself during this conference, what information do I need to tell other people who aren't in this conference what they can do? So you're all pretty much convinced that's why you're here. You're hopefully going to learn something and take it back, but you really want to be thinking about the people who it isn't on their radar yet and what you can tell them. Okay. So I've kind of hopefully painted a broader picture. Now Kang is going to scare you with lots of technical details, which is, this is all the kind of hard work that Kang predominantly has been doing over the last 18 months.